We have just finished the parshas of the building of the Mishkan, Truma Tzavik, Kisiso, Vayakil Pekude. It's a very fascinating, one of the legendary stories concerning Chaim Volozhin regarding these parshas. It is related that the Chaim, concerning the yeshiva in Volozhin, of course, the yeshiva always needs money, and as a result, you always need fundraising. So, way back then as well, the yeshiva Reb Chaim sent out various mishulochim, people going around and collecting money for the yeshiva. So there was a particular mishulach that had a kvius. It was his steady job. He already had his specific donors, and on a yearly basis, he would go to visit those people in order to receive their yearly donations. Among them was a particular villager who was extremely generous. He gave what was considered to be in those days a lot of money, something like a donation of 50 rubles. A lot of money, especially for such a person who was a villager. But he had a tremendous cheshivas ha-teira, and he wanted to contribute and have a shayfas in the limud ha-teira in Volozhin. It turns out that one day the mishulach comes to Reb Chaim and he says, listen, being that I'm quite a successful mishulach, he says, I'd like to be able to do something to enhance and to be even more effective. And that means, he says, it's about time that maybe I have, the yeshiva provides for me my own horse, my own wagon. That's the mode of travel they had in those days. Until now he was dependent on hiring a taxi. What was the taxi? A wagon driver. And if you're dependent on others, either he's available sometimes, he's not available. He comes on time, he does not come on time. And precious time, he said, was lost. So Mishul says, but the yeshiva provide, buy their own wagon and a horse, so I'll be able to use it. And I don't have to be dependent on anybody, and I'm always ready to go. And nobody's is able to stand in my way. And for a while, he also comes to Reb Chaim and says that, you know what, I also thought even to be more effective, in addition to having, he says, my horse and my wagon, so it's probably to have, you know, very expensive, good-looking suits. So when I visit the house of a wealthy man, I will look like a respectable person, not some like a pauper or like a beggar. And therefore, again, I'll be more respected in the eyes of the prospective donor. And potentially, I'll be able even to make more. So this is the way it was. Reb Chaim saw to it that the yeshiva provides him his own horse and his own wagon, provides him with a very, very well-looking suits and so on and so forth. And very optimistic, he makes his way and he reaches that particular villager, the one that he always goes to, and he expected that probably this time he'll get even more. 50 rubles was a lot of money, but now that he's coming in a respectable fashion, now he can't give a plain donation of 50. Now I'm a different person. I'm much more respectable. I deserve more. Turns out that he refused to give him a penny. Didn't give him a cent. Didn't want to give. As much as he tried to explain to him, he said to him, listen, says, I love the yeshiva very much, and I'm willing to give for the yeshiva. He says, till now I understood I'm giving. He says, for the Talmidim who are sitting and learning. But now I see that I'm supporting a horse and a wagon, fancy suits. I don't want my money to go for that. And he refused to give anything. He had no choice. Finally, when he comes back, the way it usually worked was that when the mishulach came, Reb Chaim would review the notes, look at the ledger, to see the various donations, to see who gave what and how. Did they give less? Did they give more? How things are going? It turns out he sees the particular name of that villager. He's always used to, he gave this very nice donation of 50 rubles, and now we saw that he gave nothing. And he asked the mishulach, what? And the mishulach says, listen, I tried to convince him, if not, to give more, give at least what you always gave. And always says, no, he says, if it's for a horse and a wagon, I don't want to give. He says, for fancy suits, I don't want to give. So the Chaim says to him the following, he says, listen, the next time you go in that direction, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to pay a visit to this villager, and we'll have a little talk with him and see what's really bothering him. And Kachad, after a while, time came, Chaim gets into the wagon, and they're going to visit that particular villager. And they begin to talk. While they're beginning to talk, and he explains very clearly, he said the same thing to Reb Chaim, he says, he says, I really love the yeshiva, and I love to support Limud HaTorah, he says, but here I see my money's going for other things. He says, that's not where I want my money to go for. And that's why, he says, I totally, I insisted not to participate. at this time. The Reb Chaim says to him, listen, he says, did you yourself ever learn in a yeshiva? No, not really. That means you never learned really any Gemara. He says, no. You learned Tanakh? Not really. The Chumash, he says, I learned. That's as far as I went. I learned some Chumash. The Reb Chaim says to him, so let's take a look, he says, that a posuk, which is mentioned a number of times, let's take a look, he says, in Parshas Vayakel. The posuk is as follows. Moshe says to the Bnei Yisrael, Ru'u kora Hashem b'shem B'tzalel ben Uri ben Chur l'mata Yehuda. Kadosh Baruch Hu called upon B'tzalel that he should be the builder of the Mishkan. B'tzalel is the one appointed to build the Mishkan, and now you have a list of qualifications about this B'tzalel. What does the Torah say about him? So the Pesuk says, Vayimale, he says, I filled him, Oisoi Ruach Elikim. He is filled with the spirit of Elikim. He is filled with Hashem, filled him with Ruach HaKodesh, as Ruach HaLikim, v'chokhma, b'svuno, b'das, with all levels of intelligence. Lasois komalocho, chorish v'choshev, he's a master craftsman. Lachshoi machshovois, lasois b'zovu b'ketzev b'nchoshes, a whole long list of qualifications about this B'tzalel. So B'chaim V'loish says, I want to ask you a question. Let us take, he says, the greatest Godel Hador, he says. Imagine the greatest Godel Hador, who might have talents on the side as well. Assuming that he is the Poisek Hador, he's the Poisek of the generation. He happens to know how to play music. Okay, imagine if you write a letter to him, and you write the following title. V'chvoid ha'goyin ha'godel, tzadik yisod oylem, ha'mezagmer ha'niflo, the Gvaldiki musician as well. If you're talking to someone who's ha'goyin ha'godel, all these other miluses that just stand in the way, that become bottom of a subordinate. Let's say he had a talent to sew. You know that to sew as well. He could be a tailor. He writes, V'chvoid ha'goyin ha'godel, ha'chayot ha'toyik. He's a good tailor as well. It's a derogatory. Not a miler to add these inimportant in Yonan L'gabah, and you've been talking about these Gvaldige miles of Gablis, goyin ha'godel. The question is, once you're telling me that B'tzalel, Vayimalo Yisra Ruach Elikim, he's endowed with the spirit of Hashem, but now you're telling me he knows how to maneuver with Kesef and Zov, he knows how to carve, he knows how to bang in a nail. He's a builder as well. He's a great, he's a spirit, he's a Novi, he's a prophet, he has Ruach HaKodesh, he also knows how to bang in a nail. How does the Torah put this together? And Reb Chaim said as follows. You know what the Pesuk means? Totally different interpretation. That Reb Chaim, which is not the legendary pshat that he said, the truth of the matter is, you know, the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, there's different levels of Kedusha. You had the area that was the Kodesh HaKadoshim was the highest level of Kedusha. No one was allowed to enter, only the Kohen Gadol once a year. The Oren was there. The Oren that housed the Luchos. Then you had the Heichal, which is already secondary in Kedusha. Tremendous Kedusha, the Heichal. There you had the Shulchan, you had the Menorah. Then beyond the Heichal, then you had the Azara, the general area. The general area. You had Ezras Yisrael, you had Ezras Koyhanim, you had Ezras Noshim. All of these different areas had different madregas of Kedusha. You can imagine when the time came to donate to the Mishkan, everybody wanted his money to go to the Kodesh HaKadosh. I want my money to go to the highest level of the Mishkan that my money should contribute to that area. And yet you needed the money for everything. Because the Mishkan was not just one section. The Mishkan consisted of all these various levels. So, who determined whose money goes where? Who determined? So the Pesuk says, "Vaymalo yisay ruach elikim." Hakadosh Baruch Hu gave B'tzalel ruach hakodesh, and B'tzalel was able to discern by the spirit that he had Hashem that he was endowed, the purity of each giver with what kavanah, what machshava he had when he gave. There are some people who give totally l'shem shamayim. For the honor of Hashem, they have no selfish reasons. It's not because of any covet. It's not because of any honor. It's not because they have some side reason, some side benefit. They're giving purely L'shem Shemayim. Who can read anybody's machshavos? Only someone who is endowed, who has this particular matona, who has given this gift, the gift of Ruach Elikim. So B'tzalel was able, when he received all the money, you remember all the money was pooled, and as he took out money, he was able, simply by the touch of that money, he was able to discern who the giver, with what machshava, with what kind of intentions lied behind that nesina. Therefore, the Pesuk is saying as follows: By Maloi Saruach Elikim, Lachshoy Machshava. Lachshoy Machshava means he was able to read people's machshavas, The kesef will be zov to know how the money was given, to know how the zov was given, how the kesef was given. And according to the quality of the machshava of the giver, the tzala therefore knew and designated the money for that level of kedusha. The greater purity, the greater lishma in the nesina, in the giving, it went for a higher level of kedusha in the Mishkan. The lower the level, it went to a lower level. But all was needed collectively to build the Mishkan. So B'chaim says here to this villager, he says, listen, the yeshiva needs a lot of things. We need money for the Talmidim sitting and learning. We need money, he says, for the cook, you know, and for the food to feed the Talmidim. We need money for the Mishulach, so he should have a horse, and he should have a wagon, he should have a suit, he says. So the money is going to go, some of the money is going to go for the higher level, and some of the money for the lower level. If you, villager, give lishma l'shem shemaim, your money is going to go for the Talmidim, not for the suit, not for the horse. But l'maisa, the fact is that all of it is needed and all of it is a mitzvah. Because being that you cannot do without it, every chelik is really needed. But actually, whose money is going to go to which part, to which level of kedusha, you yourself are going to determine it. If you give l'shem shemaim, you really give with purity of heart, then in fact, your money is going to go for the Talmidim are sitting and learning, and somebody else's money, which was not given with such purity, will go for the lesser level of kedusha. And that is for the bishul, and so on and so forth. This is a ma'aseh yidua that how Rav Chaim, how we spoke and how we explained the posik in light of the situation. So now we go, Rabbi Yisai, we go back to the Nefesh HaChaim. And here we now, Nefesh HaChaim, we are Shar Aleph Perek Yud Dalet. And the previous Prokim, Rav Chaim, was talking about, this is a hemshech of ma'aseh, dibur, and machshava. Chaim, way back, talked about the impact of a man's action in the upper world. That was the ma'aseh. In the previous parak, Perek Yud Gimel, he spoke about the impact of a man's dibur, of a man's word in the higher world. And now Reb Chaim will be talking about the impact, he says, of a man's intention, of a person's kavona, the impact that a mir machshava, the impact that it has. Just to conclude just the chapter about the impact of a dibur, just as an aside, something very interesting. It's brought down that the Belzer Rebbe, the Friedrich Belzer Rebbe, Rabarala, the Belzer Rebbe, B'derech Klal, when there would be a bar mitzvah, or become bar mitzvah, would try to encourage him, he would be me'oyle him, that when you put on film, that from the very first time that he puts on film, possibly to try to be mekabel upon himself, to accept upon himself, not to speak any dvarim b'teilim in his film. In other words, kol zman you're wearing the film, use it only for davening and for learning. Don't speak any secular situations unrelated to Torah film. If possible, keep that, at least be mekabel b'lineder, and try to keep it. And there are many, many who are successful in that exercise, that while they're wearing film, that they don't speak anything secular, but it's reserved. They have the film on their head and on their hand, that they reserve that period of time only to speaking Edover Shebekdusha. So this is the traditional way that he would be Meir Ebar Mitzvah Bocher to do it. So he says, one of the Bokhrim, as a matter of fact, was Matzliach, to keep this Kabbalah, and he was successful that Bishat, when he wore his film, that he would not speak any Dvarim B'Telem. Ultimately, a number of years later, time came for him to get married. So now that he's going married, so again, he goes into the Rebbe for a Brocha, and the Rebbe says to him, you know what? Being that you are so successful that while you are wearing film, and not to speak any Dvarim B'Telem, now that you're getting married, you're going to be wearing the palace as well. So maybe you should try to be mekabel upon yourself that not to speak any dvarim b'teilim calls them on that you're wearing this house. The same Kabbalah that you mekabel upon yourself during wearing a film, accept upon yourself the same minute toif that while you're wearing a talus, not to speak any dvarim b'teilim, only reserve it for inyonim of toif and tefillah, dvarim shel mitzvah. The chosen was maskin, and he was very careful not to speak any sichas chum and so on and so forth, while he was wearing his talus and certainly his tefillin. The Rebbe Lamaisa heard about it, that in fact, that he's carrying out the second Kabbalah, that he's makabel upon himself. So he said to him, sort of like in jest, he said, you know, one day you're going to realize the tremendous reward and schar, he said, for the fact that you accepted upon yourself not to speak anything other than Dvarim Shebekdusha while you're wearing your talus. And he said to him as follows. He said, the time will come one day, as everybody's time comes, when you're going to have to leave this world. So when your 120 years or so are going to be up, and you come up to the Bezin Shomala, and they're going to start asking you all kinds of questions that they will ask concerning your behavior on this world. There's going to be an accounting. And you're going to stand there trembling and terrified because you know what possibly might come out of this interrogation. What it means standing before the Bezin Shomala. So he says as follows. He says, it's an interesting thing. There is a minig Yisrael that we have. By the way, it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. There's a minig Yisrael. It's brought down your day as a machine on Aleph that a person, when he leaves this world, they bury him in the talus that he wore during his lifetime. This is a minig very commonly practiced. The talus that he wore during his lifetime and that he davened in. So the Belzer Rebbe said, being that when the time comes after 120, you're going to be buried in your talus, and you're going to come up, he says, to the higher courts of the Bezin Shomala. You can start asking you questions about your hanhogi, your practice on this world, you'll say like this. When I was alive and I wore this talus, I made sure not to talk anything, only Torah and Tefillah. Today, too, I still don't talk anything, only Torah and Tefillah. I refuse to answer the question. He says, then you'll be okay, he says. Just keep up the spinning of wearing the talus. This is what the Belzer Rebbe told him. He says, you'll have a taina, he says. While I wear my talus, he says, I don't speak anything, only tell you the truth. That's what I conducted my whole lifetime. I'm not going to change now. Still being buried in the same talus. So he's going to the next world with the same talus. So while I'm wrapped around in my talus, he says, I don't talk anything, he says, other than words of faith. While talking, learning, we'll talk, he says, tell you the truth. That's all about. There's nothing else I'm not ready to talk about. So again, this is, again, the tremendous scar of watching one's dibur that one might reap in the future world, among other things. Okay, Rabbi says, so we go here to Perek Yudalit. The Perek Yudalit here, Rav Chaim talks about, and he says, V'chein, the same thing. V'chein means the same thing that we discussed, the impact of Dibur. The same thing that we discussed, the impact of Maise, as he expresses himself. That V'chein, he says, Al Hisayri Shilamayla Al Yedei Bechines Amachshova, regarding, he says, not only deeds and words, but also he says, Kavona too, have the similar effects, he says, the same thing, and it has a hisayris lamailo. He says, makshav, the intentions of a person have similar effect, lamailo, on the upper world, as deed and as words. And in fact, he points out, we can find that Omar Dovid HaMelech, what HaMelech called the Vasholem, says in Tehillim. The HaMelech says, regarding HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says, Hayoytze yachad libam, ha-mevin el kol maseyim. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who fashions the hearts of all the people. HaYotzer Yachad Libom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu fashions the hearts of all the people. And it says, HaMeivin El Kol Maseyim. He comprehends all their deeds. So again, it says, HaYotzer Yachad Libom. It talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who basically fashions the hearts of all people. And it also says, HaMeivin, he understands El Kol Maseyim. And the question that Reb Chaim already raised before in Perek Yud Beis, and he makes reference again, where Yitzhorach Leimer, the Pesuk should have said, HaMeivin Kol Maseyim. What's the El? It says, HaMeivin, he understands, towards all of their deeds. What's the El here? The El seems to be totally out of character. It should have said, HaMeivin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comprehends, Kol Maseyim, whatever people do. What does it mean, he understands, El Kol Maseyim, towards everything they do? What does it mean, towards everything they do? What kind of expression is that? So you might remember in Perek Yud Beis, as we explained, Reb Chaim said, it means to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only sees the action, of course, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, understands El Kol Maseyim towards me is the impact, what's resulting out of their actions. In other words, what the actions are leading towards. And therefore, you cannot get away from that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is amazing El Kol Maseyim, towards which direction? Whether the impact is L'toiv, was for the good, or the impact was the opposite. So Reb Chaim says the same interpretation, HaMeivin El Kol Maseyim, regarding deed, Maisim, V'yesh Lefar Shoy Gam Kein Al Bechinet HaMashovet. So Reb Chaim, the truth is, that the same thing, it's in the same posik, it says, HaYotze Yachad Libom. When it says HaYotze Lachad Libom, so the fact is that the same thing it implies also concerning the effect of the intentions that a person's machshava has on the higher world. Hayyotze Yachad Libom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who fashions the hearts of people, HaMeivin El Kol Maseyim, means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly, of course, recognizes and takes into account also the results of a person's machshavas to where it led to. And he goes on to explain as follows. The truth is, says Reb Chaim here in Nefesh HaChaim, that it's very possible, it's quite possible, that you have two people doing the exact same Avera, and yet the Oynish is different. Again, if you have two people who are doing and committing the exact same Avera, they are doing the same transgression, they are over the same Avera, and yet the punishment will be totally different. What does it depend on? It depends on two different possibilities, says Reb Chaim. The first one. And he goes on to say again, Vuhu. And that is, Ki Yitochen, he says, it's quite possible. Kishnei Anoshim Oisim Avera Achas. It's possible that two people commit, right, the same Avera. Vimkoza Ein Oishon Shoves. And yet he said, they'll receive different punishments. What is the reason for that? He says, Oy Mipnei. One reason is because, Cho Echot Sichloi Bahato Gosoi Yoiso Gidoyle Machaveroi. One of the people who was involved in doing the Avera, his intelligence, he had more hasogah. He really comprehended to a higher degree what HaKadosh Baruch Hu means. In other words, the more you understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all about, the more responsibility you have to carry on your shoulders if you transgress against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The less you have, the less comprehension that a person has understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so much to that degree less, is also your responsibility. So a person, an individual, if we have a situation where a person is more intelligent than the other, and by the way, what would be the cause of more intelligent? One of the causes why one person would be more intelligent in his asoge, in comprehending Hashem, is mitzad his neshama. Mitzad shishoyrish nishmosoy memokim givoya ve'elyo mishol chaveroi. Because a person, a particular person, his neshama is rooted in a higher place, in other words, in the realm of neshamas. In the realm of neshamas, a particular person's neshama might be rooted in a higher place, and the higher the place that the neshama's shayrish is rooted from, so he memela automatically, he is closer and has a deeper comprehension in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Inside his neshama, because it's very neshama that he has. So ha'oynish, therefore, the punishment who kifi inyan ha'pegam shigayim l'malo. And Amela Reb Chaim tells us further that you have to remember that a person is punished according to the damage to the higher worlds caused by his avera. Now, the extent of the damage, even if two people do the exact same sin, people commit the exact same avera, yet the extent of damage of one can be higher than the other. How so? Because if one person's neshama is rooted in a higher world, so his Avera is more far-reaching. And as a result, his damage causes even greater, more. The other person, whose Neshama is not rooted that high up, thereby the damage through his Avera is also that much less, that much lower, points out Reb Chaim. And he shows on to show that. V'apigam shekol echot magia, as he says, ashoyrish nishmosoy. And the pigam, the damage resulting of a person's actions, reaches far after the root of your neshama. If the root of your neshama is higher, then the damage of your avera is higher. If the root of your neshama is not that high, then the effect of your avera is that much less as well. Support of this notion, Reb Chaim clearly points out, Kama shekosav b'tikunim, as we find in the tikunim, in the Zohar, soif tuf mem gimel, and it says there, man depogim letato. It means a person who causes damage down here in this world. It means he is sinning. A person who is pogim letato, a person who sins down here, pogim le'elo, automatically he causes damage high up. How far up? The zoyar la'asar, to the place that is gazer nishmosoi, to the place from where his nisham is taken. In other words, from the root of the place where his nisham is taken from, all the way up there, is the pegam, the damage of his avera. And this again is reiterated also in the next line. Vishomi says, B'tikunayin. Tikunayin means tikunim number, he says, is kufchav gimel. And there the Zohar says, and we can go to the brackets, you can skip the line and a half or so, and go to the translation right immediately. It says, U'kishodom oise chatoim. When a person does an avera, or averas, kifi oise yodom, according to the level of that person, it goes all the way to the root of his neshama. So the far-reaching effect of a person's sin, the person's action, a person's avera, goes to the makom, to the height of where his shayir neshama comes from. And the chenkos of Arizal. And in fact, this is how the Arizal explains it with a moshul. The Arizal explains it in Shair HaYechudim, Reish Tikkun Avonos. Also, it's mentioned in Pri Etz Chaim, Bahagdomis, Shair HaShabbos, Pergalot, Ubi Gilgulim. The Arizal says as follows. The Arizal says, one cannot compare a person who dirties the king's courtyard to someone who soils the king's palace, and the kolshikin, not to mention hakisei, the king's throne, or bigdei tefartoi, his royal garments. In other words, the Rizal tells us, one can clearly understand in human terms, in materialistic terms, if someone insults a king, there are different levels of insult, and of course the punishment would go accordingly. If someone would soil the king's courtyard, it's a terrible thing. It's the king's courtyard. But it still is not as bad as actually soiling the palace of the king himself. And even if we understand the greater damage and the greater infraction of soiling the palace of the king, that still does not come to the level of soiling the king's throne itself. And even if we understand the tremendous, tremendous dishonor, if someone soils the king's throne, it still doesn't reach the dishonor of soiling the royal garments that he's wearing. So we see that there's all these different levels. Sotu says the Arizal, the same thing is with different averis. Different averis, some are compared as soiling the king's courtyard. Some are compared to soiling the king's palace. Some are compared to actually soiling, damaging the king's throne, and even the royal garments. But we can understand that there are different levels. And he goes on to say further, the af, he says, and even though, it's an interesting comment that he's saying now, that if af shekol oilam shu yoyser givoya vinala, the truth is, the higher the spiritual world, the less it can be affected by avera. You hear this? In other words, even though the averas go very high, but the truth is, the higher the world is, the spiritual world is, the avera can less affect it. So you say to yourself, if that's true, that the higher the upper world is, the Avera does not have the power to affect it that much, so why is it so bad that the Avera is so far-reaching? Why is it so bad? The further higher up it goes, it's so, right? It's ineffective, relatively speaking. It's much less effective. Reb Chaim, even though it's less effective, but the damage is considered to be worse. You know why? And he goes on to explain the following analogy. He says, even though it's true that the higher the spiritual world, the less it's affected by sin, nevertheless, he says, it's going to give you the moshul. Can you imagine, he says, if a butler, let's give you this moshul. Imagine, he says, if you have a butler who's in charge of polishing the royal crown. A butler who is in charge, he says, of polishing the royal crown, he leaves a tiny spot. All he left was a tiny spot, but it's on the royal crown. That's a serious avera. That is considered to be a, you can imagine, that avera or punishment would be more, infinitely greater than a custodian. Imagine a custodian who leaves a pile of filth in the palace courtyard. In other words, you have on the one hand, two people did something wrong. You have a custodian who leaves a pile of filth where? In the courtyard. And then you have a butler who's polishing the royal crown and he only leaves a small piece of dirt. It's a small piece of dirt, but it's on the royal crown. The royal crown deserves the highest level of honor. And even the smallest of the spots shows up is more meaningful than a pile of filth that was left in the king's courtyard or someplace else. So therefore, even though the sin in the higher world, as we said, is less effective in causing damage, but even a small damage in the upper world is much more serious than a bigger damage in the lower world. And this is the moshul that he says. Kimishu memune, someone who is appointed, let's say he's a butler, letaher, to purify, to clean, letzachtzeach, and to shine, kisrei shomelech. Someone who is in charge of polishing the royal crown, imhishir olav afila avak muet levat, even if he should only leave a small speck of dirt, a tiny spot, You cannot compare the punishment that he will get le'oinish ha'memuneh to the butler's punishment, who is appointed as the custodian le'nakris chotzer ha'melech. He is in charge, he says, of cleaning out the yard of the king. Afim hisher, even if that custodian who is in charge of cleansing and cleaning the king's courtyard, he left o'yiniyah v'tokei harbi refish v'tit, right? And he leaves there a pile of filth. Pile. He left a lot of filth, a lot of dirt. But nevertheless, the punishment will be infinitely greater to the butler who's in charge of polishing the royal crown. V'lachein, therefore, Rabu mishpatei Hashem emes b'shinu chiliku ha'enshin l'enkeitz. And therefore, he says, for this reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's punishment will vary depending on the exaltedness of the root of the neshama of the Baal HaBeira, that he points out. It will go, l'chol echot kefi madreges ha'pegam b'shoyus l'shmosoy. Me'eze oylam chutzva. From which world was this neshama taken? From higher world, even higher world, or from a lower world? Now, so this is again one possibility. Again, this all of this is explaining one possibility. That you can have two people transgressing or committing the same aveira, the same sin, and the yonish of one will be greater than the other. Why? Because the damage that one was able to cause to his aveira is infinitely greater than the other. Why? Because the shayrish neshama, the root of one's neshama, is rooted in a much higher world, so the damage goes that much higher than the neshama, than the shayrish neshama of the other person. So that's one possibility why we would have this distinction between the einish, the level of einish between one person and the other, who happened to do the exact same ma'is aver. But there's also another stephen. There's also another possible reason, again, explaining, a second reason, why two people committing the same avera, and yet the punishment would not be the same. So it goes on further. Gam, also he says, another reason, lo yishove, einish ne'u anoshim, another reason why it will not be equal. He said, another reason why it will not be equal when two people commit the same avera, they will get different punishments. Mitam, and this is the purpose of this whole chapter here, this whole parak, this reason here. Mitam, shloihoiso machsheves shneim shove be'eis asiyas ha'ovoim. It's because they did not have the same mental intention. The action and the deed might have been both the same. But what was the kavanah behind that action? If the kavanah of one was much more deeper, more committed to the averis, and the intention of the other person was less intention, so to the degree of the kavon of the machshava in combination to the act, the role of the machshava enhances the avera. The quality of the machshava, the quality of one's intention, plays a major role in defining the level and the degree of that particular avera. Who knows that? Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On the outward appearance, observing these two people standing aside, they both did the same thing. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognizes and knows the kavona behind the ma'is aveira, the intention, as he points out. Because the machshava, together with the ma'is aveira, has intrinsic effects, again, in the damage and the resulting effects on the ma'is aveira. The more the intention behind the aveira, the greater the damage. The less the intention, less of the damage, as he points out. Ha'pegam nimshu bo'olamos, the pegam and the damage that is being happened, that takes care in the upper world, gam lepi inyan hamachshava b'shato asiyah. The extent of the damage in the higher world depends, it says, on the motive. So the motive is a crucial element in the avera. Ve'im ho'echad, and therefore, if you find that a particular person has a stronger urge, his v'kiyosa machshavte lo avera, he actually connected his machshava and was more attached to this avera. His urge was stronger to this avera. He was more involved in this avera. So vaday shuhu royu l'oynish yoser godel. So therefore, it comes out that this person deserves a greater punishment. Ki oz hapigam magiyah chaz v'sholem lo'olam es yoser l'yoynim. Because as a result, his avera brought damage to worlds that are more loftier, to higher worlds. And that's the reason, precisely, when a person does an avera unintentionally, he does it inadvertently. A shaygik. And a shaygik, certainly the achrayis of Ishoigik, right, is much, much less. He's not taken to task that much, certainly. Matamzeh, and that's precisely the reason, that Ishoigik oinsho yoyser kal mahanezik. That Ishoigik, certainly, that his punishment is much lighter than someone who does it intentional. So lachain, and therefore, omru, chazal se miseptis yuma, being that the role of the machshava is so important and has such an intrinsic effect, the Gemara says in Yuma, a very interesting mimer, that Hirhure Aveira are Koshim Aveira. That's a very interesting thing that has many, many different interpretations. Simple translation, of course, means that immoral thoughts are more harmful than an immoral act itself. Now, how could that really be? How could it be that an immoral machshava, right, Hirhure Aveira, an immoral thought, right, can be more serious or more damaging than an immoral act itself? What does it mean? So the Rambam points out the following. And one might ask the question as an aside, if someone's involved in an immoral act, so he's thinking about it too, is he not? When he's engaging in immoral behavior, isn't his mind there as well? So he has both. So what does it mean that an immoral thought, right, can be more damaging, worse than an immoral act? And the Rambam goes on to explain, and he says that because machshava thoughts, machshava first, by the way, he says this in the Moreh Nebuchim, the guide to the perplexed. And Rambam says like this. He says that the thoughts stem from a person's intellect. That's where thought comes from. A thought comes from a person's intellect, which is man's most sublime attribute. Action, that's from flesh and blood. That's animalistic, like anything. Anything, any creature. But what makes man different is the power of his intellect. Thought comes from intellect. When man's Aveira is basically, is focused on thought, and that's the main Aveira. The Aveira is because his mind is totally, fully committed and occupied, delved into. So now, actually what he has done, he has used his most sublime attribute, his thought, his intellect, in the Aveira. In my Aveira, there's some machshava to it too, because obviously he knows what he's doing. But the power and the impact of what's happening is taking place with his body. And thought is, means if a person abuses thought, it basically means he's abusing the most magnificent gift, says the Rambam, that man can have. And that is the intellect, that is the seichel. That's the idea, the notion of the damage of Hirhura Aveira, Koshim Aveira. So now, therefore, it says the Nefesh HaChaim, we go back to the posting that we started this year from. So Zeh Shekoses, he says. And that's why now we go back to the posik. Again, Dovid HaMelech says in Tehillim, Hayoytzer Yachad Libom. Again, the translation, of course, would mean, Hayoytzer Yachad Libom means the Kadosh Baruch Hu fashions the hearts of people together. You know what it means? So he says right now, Hayinu Shiroya Yachad Machshobos Libom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in one look, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have to, you know, take people individually. Like a human being, you know, I have to test you and I have to test you. Kadosh Baruch Hu can scan the entire world. When Rosh Hashanah comes, Kadosh Baruch Hu can scan the entire world in 1 second. Less than a second. That means Hayoyta Yachad Libam. Kadosh Baruch Hu fashions all of the hearts together. He scans them all together. That's how the Gemara explains it in the Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Ches. And it says, Hamei Beno Kol Maseyim. And what does it mean? Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara tells us, Shayoyta Elyon. It means to say, the Kavanah means to say, Shayyotzer Elyon means HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yizbarach Shemoi Roya Umeven Machshobos Libam HaMitzarev El Maseyem. We connect, the Nefesh HaChaim says we connect the beginning of the Pasuk with the end of the Pasuk. It's one thing to do a Maise. HaMeven El Kol Maseyem. But it's more than that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Meven Kol Maseyem by HaYotzer Yachad Libam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees the combination of your life. How much heart was connected with your ma'aser? How much machshava was connected with your ma'aser? Because that, in fact, enhances the ma'aser. The more machshava, the more intense, which has the purpose of Reb Chaim here in this parak. So it works as Hayoyta Yachad Libam HaMevin Kol Maseyem. When you do a ma'aser, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't just look at your ma'aser, but it's Hayoyta Yachad Libam HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes into account the machshavas of all the people HaMevin Kol Maseyem to see how it worked, right? How they worked in harmony, the machshava together with the ma'ase, because that makes the world of a difference. So the impact of your ma'ase is to how much machshava was in there. How much machshava was in there? Again, Ratzaloyman, shahayoyts, it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what he does is shahayoytzer el yizbaruch shu meroya umevim machshavos libo and hamistarev el ma'aseim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands the people's kavana, right, and he attaches them to their ma'ase. The mice and the machshava, they become attached together. And therefore, v'donis kol echot kifi inyan machsheves liboy shehoyo be'eis atiyas ha'ovoim. And therefore, he says, judging each person according, he said, to the intention that he had for doing the Aveira. That's how it works. As we find out, as he points out, Shlomo HaMelech says the follows. The same idea, he's trying to show Shlomo HaMelech expresses in Kehelet, Shlomo HaMelech expresses the same thought. He says there in the Pesuk, he says, Ki es kol ma'aseh holekim yavi b'mishpot al kol nelam. Literally translated means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will judge every ma'aseh, even everything hidden. Al kol nelam. Again, he judges every ma'aseh, even everything hidden. What's hidden here? The machshava. The machshava, that's the hidden part. That's the hidden chelik in your aveira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges. Shlomo HaMelech says, it's kol ma'aseh lekim yavi b'mishpot al kol nelam. Rotzoloimah. What he means to say is, Shemovad ho'inish al ma'aseh oven b'toil, that in addition to the actual ma'aseh, to the actual deed itself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also takes an account, oy yavi lekim yitzborach shemoy b'mishpot et kol ma'aseh. In other words, the galgal oleo, to attach to it, l'doina, to be judged, gamal ha'machshova ha'nalomo, also to judge the hidden intention that prompted him to do the Aveira. How this person got to be involved with this Aveira. How much machshava, how much intent. And to that degree, that will be the impact of his maisa according to the level of his machshava. So the level of one's machshava in the Aveira. So we see how exacting and how precise, we see how Kadosh Baruch Hu judges. Maybe just a very interesting emotional that we can find that, something we might have mentioned once before, but that is from the parasha of Soita. It's a very interesting parasha we have in Soita, where the husband suspects his wife from being unfaithful, and therefore he warned her not to seclude herself with a particular person, and she did. She did seclude herself with a particular person. We do not know if in seclusion an immoral act was committed or not, but for the very fact that this happened, in the meantime, she's asur labala, she cannot live with her husband until she drinks the mayim hamorim, the special waters, which at the time, called the Beis HaMikdash, the special waters. And these waters were not just simply water, but these waters had on a cloth, on a scroll of parchment, the whole parish of Saita was written, and it was dipped into the special water that was taken from the kir, from the wash basin that the kehanim used to wash their hands. They took water from the kir, and they put the cloth, they put the parchment with the parish of Saita, it was dipped into the water, and by the way, as a result, many of Hashem's names would be erased due to the water that washes away the ink. And we see to what extent HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed or allowed, not just allowed, insisted that this is the procedure, because in order to bring Shalom Bayis, because this procedure is going to prove her innocence or guilt, because she's going to drink this water after this. And this water is going to, if she's guilty, then all of a sudden, the Torah tells us, her stomach begins to bloat and so on and so forth, and her life ends. If she, on the other hand, was innocent, so not only she's innocent, which the water, nothing happened to her, but she's going to be blessed. If she could not have children till now, she's going to begin to produce children. She's going to be able to bear children. If for some reason she already had children, but she had painful childbirths, from now on she's going to have easy childbirths. If she had children that were not too bright, interesting the Gemara says, from now on she's going to have bright children. If she had children with dark complexion, to have children with whiter complexion, and so on and so forth. It goes on and on and on. She will be blessed in the area of children. Whatever the situation is in her particular station, these things are going to go to improve, are going to be improved for the better. And the question is, why is she being rewarded? She's being rewarded because she was embarrassed for nothing. In other words, she's innocent. She went through this embarrassment. Everybody saw that this woman now is being suspected of this and this and this, the most terrible immoral behavior. And now it turns out at the end that she was innocent. The question, why is she so innocent? True, she's innocent, that nothing happened in that room. But she was over Nisa Daraisa for having Yichud. She was not allowed to have Yichud. That itself is an Issa. That itself is an Issa. She violated the Issa of Yichud. She was not allowed to be secluded, right, with another man, and she was. That was definitely an Aveira. So, true, end of the day, it turns out that she did not commit an immoral act, so she didn't do the second thing. But the first thing she definitely did. So why are we rewarding her? This whole thing was brought about because she started the first Aveira. That first Aveira was, she secluded herself, she had Yichud. And here Rebel Lepian said in the Shemuz. So what do you see from here? Havada, she did an Aveira. She was over Isser Yichud. And for being over an Aveira, Havada, the Torah prescribes punishment. But the Torah measured the level of punishment, the degree of embarrassment that she had to go through. until she drank the water, which proves her innocence, that degree of embarrassment that Teiris Cheshbon was just a bit more than she deserved for being over Isur Yichid. And only the Torah is able to measure what embarrassment means, what level of embarrassment is. So for the Isur of Yichud, it's true she deserves the punishment. But in the Torah's understanding, she got more punishment than she deserved. For that extra, she's being rewarded. For that extra, only the Torah can have that extreme sensitivity, precise exactness, to figure out what degree, how many pounds of embarrassment, if we're going to use that measure. If it's 50 pounds, 50 and a half is just too much. If there's a little more than she deserves. And for that extra, she'll be rewarded for. So that's the cheshbon. So here too, when it comes to the ma'is aveira, aveira with machshava, without machshava, how much machshava? Every aspect, every chelik in the aveira is exact, has its effect, is looked at, is evaluated. What motivated you? So there's so many factors. No human being is able ever to measure that. Therefore, only Kodesh Baruch Hu is the only one that can judge a person's aveira. Sometimes you look at a person, you think he did a terrible thing. But maybe a Kodesh Baruch Hu understands where he came from, his situation. Maybe a Kodesh Baruch Hu says, no, I understand why he did this, what brought it. Doesn't mean it's an excuse, but it's evaluated the whole picture, the whole situation behind it. What caused this temptation? What was the reason? Where's his weakness? Some people are stronger than others in this area. Some people are stronger in different areas. Some people have weaknesses in certain areas. Some people have weaknesses in gambling. Some people have weaknesses in their other things, in drinking. All different areas. Some people are stronger, weaker. And therefore the degree of the aveira of how much temptation one had and was not able to withstand it, all of that is being taken into consideration. And all that Kodesh Baruch Hu is the only one who is able to judge that. We conclude, but we skip this next paragraph because it's basically reiterating. So let's just go down. You know what? I'll tell you what. Maybe we'll leave this. Let's go to the. Let's go look at the sheet. We'll see some interesting things about Machshavas Bnei Yodam. There's some very interesting memorandum regarding, because this is the Perek of Machshava. So let's take a look at the sheet here and refer to it. First item that we have here, is from the Ramchal himself, but this is in his sefer, not Mesilas Yesharim, in the sefer Das Tevunos, in Simin Kuf Chavot. And here you see exactly, it's very interesting, the Ramchal was before Reb Chaim Volozhin, way before him, but look here, you see the exact same idea here pointed out. And Ramchal says as follows, Loi kol b'nei yodom shovim. Not all people are equal. V'loi kol maisim shovim. And not all actions are equal. Ki givulois gedoilim. Some ho'odoim baruchu, because there are great boundaries, l'chol anivroim, to all creatures, b'shir mitugdik atachlis. It's an amazing thing. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu precisely, exactly measures, weighs the action of each person. The Yimsu, therefore, he says, you will find Shnei Bnei Yodom. You can find two people al Shulchan Echot. You can find two people that seemingly are doing the exact same thing. Two people are sitting at one table. Yedabru, they're talking, conversation, conversing. Yoichlu v'yishtu, eating, drinking. The Toildois Ma'ase Echot, and yet, the result of one person's action, Yis'alu Adroim Shemei Shamayim. He says, you can have a person, by the way, he says, by the way, a person can eat. And you can eat L'Shem Shamayim. You can eat because you want to have koyach to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have two people doing the exact same. Both are eating the same sandwich. They're drinking the same beverage. And one person's simple act of eating can have so much meaning in Shamayim because he's doing it for such positive reasons. To give him the ability, to give him the power, to give him the courage to serve Hashem. And therefore his actions, he says, they reach Yisalu Adroim Shemei Shamayim. It reaches the high heavens. The Toildos Ma'aseh Acher, and the results of the other person, the second person's actions, Lo Yisalu V'Lo Korav Aleihem. The Chalav No Shaychis does not even begin to follow the actions of the other. Both did the exact same thing. They're all sitting at the same table. They're all eating and all both drinking. They're doing the same thing. And yet the actions are one actions of Kedusha, and the other has no shaykhis, no connection. And he points out, Yoinis and Ben Uziel. Because remember the Gemara tells them Masechta Sukkah, the Kedusha of Yoinis and Ben Uziel. When Yoinis and Ben Uziel, the Gemara says, when he was sitting and learning, there's so much Kedusha in the air generated, that if a bird would fly, if a bird would happen to fly over his head while he was learning, it would become burned to a crisp, would disintegrate from the Kedusha Satayrin. Not every person who learned generated that kind of Kedusha. So you have Yonis Ben Aziel learning, you have another Talmud Chocham learning, but yet one person generates more Kedusha and one less. Yonis Ben Aziel, but Tishu Ish Kodesh Benoir Moit, Ramchal used that lotion. Yonis Ben Aziel was an Ish Kodesh Benoir, he was an awesome holy man. Vinishmosai Mu'uteres Be'itre Kedusha, and his Nishom is crowned with crowns of holiness, Ve'ha'ora Rabba, with all the tremendous spiritual light. Al-Kain, therefore, called Maisa Sheyase, any act that Yoinis and Ben Aziel did, performed, Yale V'yagia L'Roima Sholoilom, to the high heavens, V'yenanea Kol Eifame HaKoyish, and he shakes the upper world. When Yoinis and Ben Aziel moves, he shakes the upper world. The Malochim Yishamayim. The Odomacher, and yet another person, Asher Inenu Kol Kach Kodesh, another person who does not have that much Kedusha, his actions will not rise up to that greatness. And in this manner, we divide Ma'aseh Odom. There's a division clearly between the actions of different people, whether on the division, how much good, higher level of good, lower level of good, or totally ra, totally bad, good, bad. These are the actions of people. Sometimes it can do similar things, and sometimes one could be a positive act, and one could be a destructive act. And just to show you one line we have here, and this is again number two, this is the Ramchal and the Droshes. Ramchal there points out exactly what the Nefesh HaChaim says. He says, Hapigam, the extent of damage from one's Avera, will if he erech roimimus nishmosai. A person like the Nefesh HaChaim said, whose nishmosai is from higher up, that's rooted in higher worlds, the damage is higher. Will kechol she nishmosai yoyser givoya, exactly, Mamish, the words. Come out the exact same words. As the Nefesh HaChaim says, a person who is Neshama, who knows? Anybody sitting here, maybe your Neshama comes from so high up. Who knows? Who knows? You don't know. And if the Neshama comes from that high up, the achrayas of one's actions is all that much greater. Only because Boko knows the sharias of anybody's Neshama. And here we see that the pagam, the extent of the damage of a person's Avera, it's the extent of how high the neshama of the person will be rooted. We have here, very interesting, the third item, and this gives us a little bit of an answer. This is practical advice. Being that every person has to keep his machshavas, his mind, as clear as possible from thoughts that do not belong there, and that's a tremendous challenge because thoughts just fly into a person's head, and a person is a boss of Adam, has natural instincts which promote all types of thoughts. So there's a tendency many times to panic or become anxious. Anxiety is the worst way to fight off thoughts that you don't want in your mind. Because the more that you try to push out thoughts because you believe, and it's true, they should not be there, it becomes like a vicious cycle. All the more the thoughts are going to try to be there, and you're going to fight to push them out, and they're going to come back in. So therefore, you have to do it with without anxiety, without panic, and to do it little by little, thereby not losing control. This is an eitzah which is brought down in a sefer called Machshov Achas, sefer Musar, which is gleaned from different Balei Musar. He says as follows, called sefer Machshov Achas. Ein lahamik, he says, v'loy bishtadlus meruba lidchois ha-hirhurim. Very interesting thing. Person has hirhurim royim. And we're talking about Eloh Chayit and Mutaku, who are bothered by it. And of course, they should be bothered by it. No, so what are you trying to do? Just try to banish the thought. So all of a sudden, the more you try to banish it, it doesn't work. So he's telling to give you a little bit of an eitzah, he says. A little bit of an eitzah, he says. Don't try, yishtablus meruba. Don't try with all your might, with all your power. Ki zois tivas nefesh odom, because the nature of man, called shemamik litchois, the harder you push, eizah rayon, a thought, he said, or eizah tzaru ki yoitzaboy, oi tigbar ha-hisnagdis b'nefesh odom. Just the opposite. It will, he says, it will overpower itself. It'll fuel itself. The more you try to push it out, it will fuel itself even more. The opposition will fuel itself. Lahalhiv hamuzelodom, to try to ignite that which you want to remove, which is supposed to be estranged from you. Vazois, therefore, he says, miribui hishtavlis, by using too much power, lidchois haherhurim, from banishing thoughts, yuchalios shitoilu the pumim, sibigidoilu, you yourself may be the cause, the chazik haherhurim, the chen gam betzilis. Very interesting. The person said, by davening, all types of thoughts come, supposed to be concentrated on the davening. About it. The objective should be to get rid of the thoughts, but not to do it in a way that you're panicking or put it with anxieties. But little by little, to use, like to take little steps, little by little, to try to get it out as much as possible. But if you're going to try with all your power, with all your might, you get anxious about it, so then just the opposite. It's just going to overpower you. It's going to take control over you. Ha'omo harav. The more, he says, the more effort, litchois, machshov zorois, to try to push out foreign thoughts, moyelidim lepo'omim, many times, not always, but lepo'omim, sibil machshov, that becomes the cause itself. That now becomes the cause itself. The fact that you're trying to push it out, that now becomes the fact itself, the sib itself, the cause itself, because this is the nature of man. It works, by the way, by anxiety attacks. It works in any situation. If people have anxiety attacks, it works like a vicious cycle. They say to themselves many times, there are certain things that make them anxious. And when certain things, people, let's say, are afraid of certain situations. Now, intellectually, they say to themselves, there's nothing to be afraid of. And they really try to rationalize it. And from a logical standpoint, maybe they shouldn't really be afraid of it. Because it says, what am I really afraid of? So he says to himself, I shouldn't be afraid of it. So the more that he says, I shouldn't be afraid of it, the anxiety overpowers him. It says, you're trying to get rid of this particular thought. So that itself causes, because you say to yourself, I shouldn't be. So that indictment of yourself, that itself creates anxiety, a fresh anxiety within yourself. And that you do have it. Pushing it out, and it comes back, and so on and so forth. Just continues like a big chain. That's one of the problems, how anxiety attacks, in fact, how they work. Therefore, when we talk about machshoves, I talk about machshoves, I'm here fighting here with the clock here, so I'm just trying to think here. So first, let me just tell you one thing here. What Rav Tzadik HaKohen says here, number 5, we have here. Rav Tzadik says, the power of machshoves goes so far. And this is something which is rooted in Torah HaBaal Shem Tov. The Tzaddik is in Ur Zerua, in Omud Mem Aleph. He says, the truth is, if you ask a person, where is he? Define the place you are. So you're going to say, you're here in the shul. That's where you're now. You may be at home. And if somebody would ask you, where are you? There is a telephone call. Where are you? You say, I'm home. You might be at home. But if your mind is in Hong Kong, you're not home. You're in Hong Kong. Tzaddik HaKohen says, because the definition of a person is his mind. It's his machshoveh. The body's just a shell that houses it. Take out a person's brain, there's nothing left. As a matter of fact, there's a whole halachic discussion. What would be if a time comes? And today, now everything is possible. You can have brain transplants. So you can imagine you have a person, his name is Reuven. You take out Reuven's brain, right? And put Shimon's brain into Reuven's skull. Reuven, well, guess what? This person's not Reuven. It's Shimon. This person's not Shimon. It's Shimon with Reuven's body. But this person in front of you is not Reuven anymore. A person's definition is where his machshov is. And it goes so far that the Chasam Sofer says, in Parshas Vayishlach, that if a person lives with his mind connected to Eretz Yisrael, the Chasam Sofer, the benefits that you gain, that even if you don't have the schus to be always in Eretz Yisrael, you're a chutzlaritz, we're here, we're not in Eretz Yisrael. But if your mind is really connected to Eretz Yisrael, the Chasam Sofer, you receive automatically many of the benefits of actually being in Eretz Yisrael while you're still here in Chutz Lo'aretz. Why? Because your mind defines your position, where you are. In other words, a person is not an object. The place of an object is where it is put. You put down something, a book on a table, that's its place. The makom of a person, the place of a person is not where he is placed. The place of a person is where you want to be, where your mind is at. And that's a few words of Rav Tzadik HaKohen. Let's take a look at it. The Mokoim Shehu HaMachshoveh Shel Odom Shomu Kol Odom. Now, it's not just your machshoveh is there. The whole body is there. Ki Iker HaOdom Ina HaGuf Rak HaNefesh. The guf doesn't count. It's the nefesh. Your whole metzias is the nefesh. HaNefesh and the soul, the neshama, Eino Dobor. It's not something tangible. Rak Koyach HaMachshoveh U'Maharet. It's the machshoveh and the thought. The haraita shebadam. It's the want. It is the thought, the will of a person. Umakim shemachshavta yaduka, where your mind is connected to. That there kachu kol tzuras adam boisei. The whole tzuras adam is where your mind is at. So if your mind is not here, your mind is someplace else. You are there. You are not here. So I just want to tell you, and you can look at it at your own. We have here number 7. And this is brought down here, the sefer called Hamayin Hanitzchi in Parshas Tzav. It brings out from the sefer Chovetz HaTalmidim. I just want to just tell you, I'll tell you this by heart. Sefer Chovetz HaTalmidim is a tremendous sefer. It's from the Esh Kodesh. You know, Esh Kodesh was a great tzaddik. His name was Rebbe Lemelech from Piyasnitz. It's not far from Varsha. He was Niftar al Kiddush Hashem. A tremendous going, a tremendous tzaddik. He was a Rebbe of Chassidim, and a lot has been written about him of his last months. His daughter was taken away by the Nazis and so on. Ultimately, he also perished there, and he was a tremendous pedagogue also, in addition to everything, how to teach Talmidim, how to learn the attitudes of life and so on and so forth. So he says in this sefer, Chovetz HaTalmidim, which is brought down over here, that he says the truth is, if a person wants to be successful in removing, he says, thoughts of sin, immoral thoughts, he says, then the time is to practice exercises of trying to be in control of your thoughts, even when you're not attacked by immoral thoughts. In other words, when you want to think about the weather, but you should have an exercise, you know what? I want to stop thinking about that. I want to now think about something else. And then you put yourself a time limit, you know what? After 2 minutes or 3 minutes, 4 minutes, now I want to think about other things. After a while, if a person practices these kinds of exercises, unrelated to mitzvah, unrelated to chet, where you're not being threatened by anything. We have a machshav of a chet. When you have a machshav of sin, so now you're being threatened. You have to push it out of your thought. It's very difficult because the chet takes control, as we said before. The more that you are worried about pushing it out, it's going to push its way back in. So you have to do these kind of exercises, he says, in a very innocent way, in a very neutral way, when you're not threatened by anything. He said, thoughts which are not even that relevant, important thoughts. Any type, he says, machshav eshov reshus. And then you get rid of that, and maybe change the subject to your mind. And now I'm going to think about other things. And then you think about other things. He says, after a while, when a person practices these type of ideas of having control over one's machshavas, then there's the Hashem, you have to say to the Shemaya, that even when it comes to machshav eshov chet, that you will be in control and not the chet over you. You know how they say it? Yes.